there was not a quorum present, we will consider it to be a, we will consider it to be, to have been a, I'm drawing a blank, a subcommittee meeting. Mrs. Munson, if you would.
Board of Well Examiners, there were about approximately 20 people present. We had two people that testified in the negative and the rest of them very positive about continuing the board. The recommendation from the audit committee was that the board was not needed in the public interest. This, of course, was just preliminary testimony, and some of it was submitted in writing for the other committee members. The Board of Marine Pilots met in the afternoon, and their testimony was definitely went along with the audit committee, which said we do need this board in the public interest. And there was no negative testimony at all at that time on that particular board.
Very fine. Thank you very much. I'm going to appoint you chairman of a subcommittee with regard to those two boards to make a recommendation to the full committee. The full committee will have another hearing on each of those two boards, but I'll ask you to chair those meetings in Juneau after the session starts. And the subcommittee will consist of you and Mr. Randolph and Mr. Osterback, because even though Alvin's not here, I know he has a very serious interest in the Board of Marine Pilots, particularly after what has happened in his own district and the legal questions surrounding the jurisdiction of the Board of Marine Pilots with regard to the Pribilofs adventure with the Japanese vessel over the last few weeks. We've been joined by another gentleman who just is filling out the little piece of paper. Sir, can I ask your name?
You sure may. I'm George Oliver. I'm president of the Anchorage Board of Realtors.
Very fine. We have George Oliver has joined us for the people around the teleconference circuit. He is president of the Anchorage Board of Realtors. And just once more before we start, I'll go through the circuit again. Maxine, do you have any additional people in Fairbanks?
No, we don't at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Deborah and Juno.
Deborah and Juno. Lance Youngquist has joined us here now.
Very fine. Lance, contrary to what I told you on the phone earlier, because we seem to be having a rather light turnout from the general public and the profession, after we have had the testimony from the people who have shown up, I think we'll just ask the members of the commission to sit with the committee around the teleconference circuit on an informal discussion basis, and of course we will be asking for formal testimony and a further presentation during the session. Soldatna, Rhoda?
There's no one here yet.
Okay, thank you. Bob, is Mr. Beam there? Bean there yet in Nome?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, he's here.
Okay, we will ask him to be our first witness. I also assume that Mr. Oliver here wishes to testify.
I do.
As it happens right now, that's all the people other than members of the commission who are on the teleconference circuit in these three time zones who have indicated a wish to testify, but there was some information this meeting might be starting later than my agenda had said. I understand Mr. Bean has a particular area of concern about the current law and the performance of the Real Estate Commission in a certain area, and he'll offer that in his testimony here in a moment. The working document we're all looking at is a performance review of the Real Estate Commission, which is dated May 7, 1979, prepared by the Legislative Audit Division, which has the responsibility for preparing these audit reports, which are then referred to the responsible subject matter committees by the presiding officers in each house. The burden of proof is on the proponents of continuation of any board or commission under 4466050, a section of Alaska statutes. It is the only provision in Alaskan law or in any situation involving the legislature where a legislative committee is actually required to follow a very narrow procedure and even have a standard or a burden of proof as though it were a court. whatever our private predisposition might be, we probably are required to listen to the testimony and the evidence. And unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your viewpoint, the proponents of any board or commission or governmental entity start in the "have you stopped beating your wife lately, guilty until proven innocent" position. That is a justification anew that the whatever might have happened 2, 5, or 6, or 10 years ago before any previous legislature, a justification anew about the need for the governmental unit in the first place, and in the second place, discussions about possible needed law changes after that issue is addressed. With that, Mr. Bean in Nome wishes to testify to the committee with regard to the Real Estate Commission. Mr. Bean, if you would, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Bean, and I'm a licensed real estate salesman in the town of Nome, and I work for Marston Real Estate. The main office is in Turnigan. My comments may be a bit out of context, as I am not referring to the past or present performance of the commission. I've had absolutely no problems in that area whatsoever. However, in conversations with my broker, Mr. Brooke Marston, and as he has related his conversations to the commission, there may be some proposed regulations in the near future which could significantly affect the operations of the real estate profession in the Bush areas. As the current statutes indicate, a salesman, of course, must work for 2 years for a broker prior to being eligible for applying for a broker's license and taking the examination. And this is, of course, all well and good and serves well to protect the public. Currently, it seems that the law does not restrict an individual from a remote area from going through the procedures of applying for a salesman's examination, passing his examination, working for a broker, and thereby eventually getting his own broker's license and establishing a brokerage in the outlying areas. Indications are, however, that regulations will be tightened up as to the degree of supervision that the broker must provide on perhaps a daily basis of the salesman. Of course, if this goes into effect, what we're looking at is that a salesman will not be allowed to operate in a bush area without a broker being present. And in fact, the effect of this type of regulatory action would really deny the services of the profession to the outlying areas. Because an individual would either have to be a broker in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, wherever, and then actually move to Nome, or an individual who lived in Nome or another outlying area that wanted to get into the profession would have to move to another area for 2 years until he had gone through his apprentice program, what have you, gotten his training, and then moved back to the area. This basically terminates my comments, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bean. Are there questions by the members of the committee? Mrs. Munson?
You said that these were proposed regulations. Who have they been proposed by?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to indicate that these are proposed regulations. Conversations between Mr. Brooke Marston and Mr. James McGowan, who I believe is the Executive Secretary of the Commission, and I also talked to Mr. McGowan in reference to this, and he asked for my input. Apparently they have not had much input from the Bush areas in the past, and most of the regulations that have been drawn up in the past are really concerned with the principal areas of activity, which would be expected. As far as I know, I'm the only agent in Northwest Alaska that is active at this particular time, so consequently the input is going to be fairly limited. But Mr. McGowan indicated to Mr. Marston that the tendency to strengthen and stiffen the regulations in the future could very possibly lead to the type of situation that I'm in right now not being possible. And I was concerned about this, of course, because obviously, it would put me out of business, and additionally, I think that it would deny the opportunity for the Bush areas to have professional real estate services. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, if there were proposed regulations, these conversations, did they come from the Real Estate Commission?
He said the executive secretary who works for the committee.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. They came from the executive secretary, Mr. McGowan.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions by the members of the committee? Well, sir, you're talking to the right people because it happens that in addition to a quorum of the House Commerce Committee, you've got a quorum of the Real Estate Commission around this circuit right now, and they're all listening to your remarks. And obviously, they'll be taking that into account when they do look at any proposed regulations that come from their executive secretary. And, of course, it is a concern that the legislature would address. There's always a balance, I guess, necessary between the different needs of rural and urban areas, and you can put in what might seem to be good safeguards for a certain kind of service or profession, and if you don't look beyond your nose, you might be only addressing the realities of downtown Anchorage. At a later time, we'll probably ask the commission members to comment if they wish about that particular issue when we get into the later portion of the meeting. There are no further questions. The committee of Mr. Bean will go on to testimony by Mr. George Oliver here in Anchorage, representing the group he's president of, the Anchorage Board of Realtors. Mr. Oliver, if you'd take a chair right there. Unfortunately, the microphones at this location require you to press that button constantly. That's not true in Fairbanks or Juneau. I'm not quite sure why they did that, but your hand may get a little tired, but you'll need to do that so that others can hear you. If you would.
Well, good morning to everybody on the circuit here. My name is George Oliver. I've been president of the Anchorage Board of Realtors since the 1st of January 1979. Prior to that, I was the vice president on the board and a director on the board. So I'm completing now 3 years experience on the board of directors. And I've been licensed in the state since 1974, receiving my broker's license in the end of 1976. I am currently an associate broker with Bowden Company Realtors in Anchorage. I'm a little bit...
Would you say the name of that company again, please?
Bowden Company, B-O-W-D-E-N. I'm a little bit concerned that I don't have better prepared remarks for the group this morning, having to do this rather hastily. I have, however, had an opportunity to read and digest thoroughly the report of the legislative audit. I'm pleased to see this work being done. I'm rather disturbed that we didn't have a chance to provide more input when the audit was taking place. I can recall of no instance when anyone from the audit team contacted either myself or any of the members of my board of directors, and I felt that might have been something that might be worthwhile to make known, because I think the professional organizations certainly ought to be given a chance to participate in the audit of these commissions and boards, as well as the review by the legislature. The first point I'd like to make is that we, as a group, agree overwhelmingly, I believe, that the Real Estate Commission should be continued in existence. We feel that the dramatic growth in the numbers of licensees in the state and the numbers of real estate transactions that are taking place absolutely require a commission type arrangement or some kind of supervision at the state level in the interests of the public, as well as in the interests of the real estate practitioners. I'd like to address recommendation number one and say very briefly that...
Excuse me, sir, you're reading from some materials, or at least using them as support?
Well, I'm using some notes. I'd be happy to leave a copy of this, which has the main points with you.
Oh, no, I wasn't going to stop you from doing that. I was just asking that if you have any written materials, if we could have them later after your testimony.
I'd be happy to leave you my notes, but they're really just notes. They're not...
Or if you feel they're incomplete, could you just supplement it with a letter later, if that would be all right?
I'd be happy to do that.
Whichever
if you
wish.
Think it's necessary, certainly.
Okay, go ahead.
The first recommendation that the audit report made concerned the investigations of complaints by the executive secretary and a possibility of conflict of interest there. Certainly we agree that the executive secretary looking into any complaints, whether he's making a full investigation or merely addressing complaints brought to his attention, should avoid any conflict of interest. He should scrupulously avoid any conflict of interest there. And if it has been taking place, it certainly ought to cease. I'd like to next go to the second recommendation that the...
I probably shouldn't be interrupting you, but it's in the train of your I'm just puzzled as to why you didn't comment further. There were other recommendations there. You talked about avoiding conflict of interest. What do you feel about the recommendation that the investigations actually be taken out of the purview of the executive secretary and only put into occupational licensing and then to the board?
I have some notes here on concerning the third recommendation I made, that having to do with the Real Estate Commission making investigations, and I'd address that further later.
Fine, go ahead.
I will comment on how I feel about how the investigation should be held. The subject of monetary settlements from the surety fund concerns me considerably, and I feel that it would be a mistake to change the current procedure there without a great deal of study and consideration. I believe it's fraught with problems that if a decision were made to immediately authorize the commission to make disbursements from that surety fund without a benefit of a court hearing. My initial concern with it concerns due process. Certainly our real estate salespeople and brokers and the general public is entitled to due process under our law, whether that be with the courts or whether that be with another body is probably not too important, but as long as a fair hearing is granted by everybody concerned. I'm afraid that the Real Estate Commission, if given the authority to make disbursements, would find that they would be unable to handle the load of hearings and to give a fair hearing in the case of complaints and requests for disbursement from that fund. I believe that there's no way the Real Estate Commission could find the time to devote to the hearings. And I give you an example, the number of complaints that are handled by our own professional standards committee in the Anchorage Board of Realtors alone. It's almost overwhelming, the number of actions that are taking place to resolve disputes, not only between licensees, but between licensees and members of the public. Our procedures provide for the members of the public to bring complaints to the Professional Standards Committee of the Anchorage Board of Realtors, and if there is agreement from both parties to subject themselves to a ruling, either an arbitration thing or an ethics matter, which could be a criminal conduct, then the cases are held very similar to court cases. Now, if that's the type of hearing, I believe, that is necessary to protect the interests of the public, as well as the real estate licensees. They're entitled to a due process that is due process, and if we're going to let the Real Estate Commission make disbursements from this fund, we certainly shouldn't deny the due process. And the Real Estate Commission obviously cannot handle the workload. We have hearings probably sometimes one or two a week in resolving some of the minor disputes that come up, the type of thing that normally would be, I'm sure, heard by the Real Estate Commission. So I feel that a court or at least some other type of due process hearing is absolutely mandatory before a disbursement is made from that fund. Let me turn then to the fourth recommendation in the audit report concerning educational requirements prior to taking examination as a salesman and then continuing requirements for relicensing or renewing the licenses. As you might expect, there's a division of opinion among the licensees on this subject, as well as there is, I'm sure, among yourselves and the general public. We have a few people who are vocally very strongly opposed to any sort of mandatory educational requirements for licensing or renewal of licenses. On the other hand, I think it's fair to say, and I believe the legislative audit report bears this out, that the majority of our licensees favor continuing, favor educational requirements in general, in concept, and I would like to support that at this time, because I'm sure the majority of the members of my Anchorage Board of Realtors would vote in favor of, although they haven't been asked to vote on that question, I'm sure they would vote in favor of some minimum requirements to be established at this time. We understand that we are one of a very small number of states that have this kind of requirement at present, And we're also aware of some of the problems that are being encountered in the other states where educational requirements are being imposed. We know of some cases where there are, we think, greatly in excess of the need to protect the public interest. One state, I'm not sure whether it's Ohio or Illinois, I learned last year that legislation currently under consideration in that state would require a bachelor's degree, for example, to be a real estate salesman. Now, this would be a phased program, and it wouldn't be initially, but down the road about 3 years, it would require a bachelor's degree to sit for a salesman's exam. Now, that, we think that's entirely ridiculous. That same legislation would require a broker to have a master's degree, about 3 years in the future, have a master's degree in order to sit to renew his license as a broker. We think those kind of measures are entirely excessive to the real requirement. So while we favor educational requirements in concept, we feel that any requirements imposed at this time should be minimal requirements. We impose very minor requirements initially, and we'll see how this thing goes in a few years. I think it requires a few years' experience to really know which way we should go in that direction, but we think it's time we should make a start. We're also aware that the that there has been a disbursement of funds from the surety fund, if I'm not mistaken, to examine this and to develop a program that would provide additional education through the state of Alaska, the University of Alaska. I'm not sure that that will lead to legislation, or I'm not sure what the intent was there at this time, but I would like to point out in that connection at this hearing that the Professional Association of Realtors throughout the country has developed a very fine educational system. And while the courses that they offer are not necessarily the best ones probably to be used for a person who sits for a license the first time, the courses that are offered through the auspices of the National Association of Realtors locally here in Anchorage and other places occasionally in Alaska, but throughout the rest of the country, are certainly wholly adequate to meet the needs of the continuing education and would serve to fulfill the requirement for education prior to license renewal. Most of our successful real estate practitioners avail themselves of those courses of instruction or similar courses like them and keep themselves professionally on top of their business. If they're not doing that, many of them are not successful and will fall out of the pattern anyway. With respect to recommendation number 5 of the audit report, I believe there's very little I can say on that subject. It's my understanding that the statutory requirements for developing plans and programs for the Real Estate Commission were probably not very well understood.
Let me interpose something just to save you and the Commission and other people who testify here some time. As a matter of fact, that same criticism has been raised with regard to every board, all of the 23 boards, at least every Sunset Review document I've seen, because that provision in Title 37 seems to be a secret. I had hoped that in light of our Sunset Review hearings this last year, the Department of Occupational Licensing might cause some of the boards this year to know a little bit more about it, but apparently this hope was not a realistic one. So we are not surprised, nor are we offended, and you're in the same boat with everyone else. Those things are supposed to be met under the laws with regard to preparation of budgets. All the boards have normally let OL prepare their budgets, and therefore it's kind of a fielder's choice. And because you weren't informed and the commission hasn't been informed, it may be their responsibility, but it may also not be their fault. Go ahead.
That's generally the feeling that I had also. I did have a chance to review the comments made by the Real Estate Commission members concerning the audit report, and it's obvious that they also recognize a requirement in that direction, and it appears to me that they're moving in that direction, and I would suggest that we might be able to let that matter lie. I would point out that the position of the executive secretary is relatively new. It's only a couple of years in existence, and it would seem to me that one of the functions of the executive secretary would be to maintain the long-range financial goals and objectives of the commission and do it in a sort of a professional fashion, and maybe he hasn't been able to get that accomplished in the short time he's been in office there. That addresses the specific comments. I would like to add another remark, if I may. And I'm sorry that we didn't have a chance to enter this recommendation into the discussions of the legislative audit team, because it's a matter that we real estate professionals have been concerned with for some time, and that is the need for a little more adequate representation at the state government level for the real estate industry, which has grown so dramatically in the past few years, as I mentioned earlier. Our recommendations, specific recommendations to the legislature in the past, have been that there should be created a separate division of real estate within the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, similar to the Division of Insurance or the Division of Securities. We feel rather strongly about this. We feel further that it would not be very costly in terms of funds and manpower. We feel also that the income generated from the real estate license fees are more than adequate to compensate for the additional requirements of personnel and staffing and office expenses and so forth. We feel that we would get much more timely response to the problems associated with the real estate industry than to come to the Real Estate Commission. And we feel that if this were done, then many of the functions, or most of the functions probably, of the real estate, the executive secretary of the real estate board could be made the responsibility of the head of that division of insurance, and that the position then, then the position of executive secretary of the real estate commission could be abolished. I believe that that recommendation deserves study by the group that is studying this audit report, and I would hope that you can find time to consider that in your deliberations. That ends the prepared comments I had. I'd be prepared to be glad to discuss any of these points in further detail.
Well, some of us do have questions, but I had thought you had said earlier you were going to comment about investigation procedures, and also in more with regard to recommendation 3. It requires an accurate and proper system for handling complaints and so forth, and some criticisms there. And also recommendation 1, which I asked you about, there they were stating that the executive secretary should not deal with the complaints. Instead, they ought to be filed with the investigative unit of occupational licensing, arguing that then the executive secretary could do other things, might mediate minor complaints and so forth. And also there's a criticism that the executive secretary's wife is a real estate broker, and there have been some situations that they say involved actual conflict of interest. I wonder what your views are with regard to those various recommendations involving investigations of complaints.
Well, thank you. I did neglect here to go back to that recommendation 3. Let me dwell on the conflict of interest thing a minute, if I may. I have no knowledge at all of any problem. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, and obviously there is something that's taken place that I'm not aware of. But in my experience on the board of directors of the local board, of which the executive secretary's wife is a member of the local board, there have been no problems come to the board attention with specific reference to conflict of interest in the manner in which it's highlighted by the audit committee. Certainly the problem exists there, and I believe that it's necessary to sort of put in context the type of work that the executive secretary does. He receives numerous phone calls, and it's at some point in a conversation with somebody, he has to make a determination of whether he's dealing with a real complaint or a subject that requires investigation. And I think it's up to him to make a decision of his own that, hey, if this is something that involves a conflict of interest in my personal affairs, then I better turn it over to somebody else. And if he hasn't done that, then shame on him. He should have. But he can't avoid, in his position, discussing problems with people who call his office. And every time that phone rings doesn't necessarily mean that there's a complaint there that's worthy of investigation by any means at all. I would make that point.
So you believe that he ought to still have that responsibility, and that responsibility ought not be made solely that of the Division of Occupational Licensing?
Well, I think he performs a very vital function there, a place that people can come to. At least there's an office there that they can come to and discuss their problems concerning real estate. Mm-hmm. And that has to be, I believe, in the interest of the public. It's something that didn't exist before his position was created, and that was one of the prime reasons I think his position was created.
Since I may forget it, since Mr. Long, I believe, is in at the teleconference center in Juneau, I wish he'd make note now of the fact that I'd like at least a comment from him to the extent he feels he can comment on this particular subject matter in this colloquy. Go ahead, sir, if you will.
Well, let me go then to back to the subject of the investigations by the Real Estate Commission. I was rather disturbed a little bit when I read that initially, that investigations were being handled by individual members of the Real Estate Commission, and on after reflecting about it a bit, I'm not so sure that that's wrong, and maybe that's the best way to go under the circumstances. I do feel, however, that any investigation requires a professional approach, and I believe it would be better to leave the investigating to professional investigators and let the commission then rely on the results of an investigation conducted by someone who has the time and the professional ability to do the job justice. With all due respect to the Real Estate Commission and their abilities, they're fine people, and I'm sure they can investigate properly. But I don't think they have the time to do it, nor do I think they should be asked to do that kind of work. And I was pleased to see in other actions there is a move afoot to increase the investigative capability in support of the real estate industry. It's my understanding that an additional personnel space has been created within the, I'm not sure where it is, I believe it's within the Division of Occupational Licensing, that would be a person would be hired to devote himself exclusively to the investigation of real estate complaints. I think that's a move in the right direction, and I think if that is done, then there should be no need for the real estate members, the commission members, to conduct investigations themselves. Does that adequately respond to the question?
Yes, and was that's basically the testimony you wish to give with regard to the investigative function?
Yes, it is.
Any questions, members of the committee? Mrs. Munson was interested in a moment ago.
Yes, I wanted to go back to creating a division of for real estate. At the present time, is the executive secretary employed by the commission?
I'm not sure I'm the best person to answer that question. My understanding is that his bosses are the Real Estate Commission. He works for the Real Estate Commission. Who he's employed by, who writes his check, I'm not sure. He's
well, the reason that I made this distinction, I'm sure the state writes his check, but and this is why I wanted to ask you again, because you said his position could probably go under the division then. And I'm not quite so positive that the commission should give up that the power of having somebody work for them. We've heard lots of complaints about a state employee that's assigned to work with commissions.
Well, certainly my comments are only one of many that you'd receive on that subject, but it would certainly appear to me that the great majority of the functions performed by the executive secretary could well be performed by someone in charge of a separate division down within the where that position would be physically located. Well, I don't know, but certainly we need some more help in managing the affairs. We have all kinds of problems with keeping track of our licensees, for example, and dealing with somebody in the Division of Occupational Licensing who really understands the real estate business. It's very difficult for us in that respect.
Any further questions, Mrs. Munson? Any other questions? Mr. Randolph?
Yes, Mr. Oliver, I have one just observation. I was really kind of surprised to have you come down on the side of, you know, government mandatory community education. I think I understand why you're coming down in favor. You indicated with fairly minimal support, or at least minimal requirements at this time. And then you also went on and gave some examples of where the requirements in other states have gotten pretty onerous. And it seems to me because of that, you wouldn't want to let the camel get his nose in the tent. And I guess you're doing it because you think it's a popular political thing to do. I doubt left to their own devices, many of the real estate salesmen and brokers would favor mandatory continuing education. And I think another comment you made is that that people who don't keep up to speed on very rapidly changing circumstances in any field, particularly in real estate businesses, aren't going to be in business too long because they're not going to be able to compete. I'd like for you to maybe just expound a little bit further on why you're in favor, or even to the degree you are, of mandatory continuing education.
Mr. Randolph, let me give you an example. I get numerous complaints and criticism. It's very common within the industry that a person can go sit for the real estate salesman's license and with very little preparation, if he is very intelligent at all, can pass the real estate salesman's license. He can then hang that license in a broker's office and not be actively engaged in the business at all. As long as he keeps that license active for 2 years, then he's eligible to sit for the broker's exam. And then again, if he is intelligent enough and does a little homework prior to the exam, he'll be able to pass the broker's exam. And then he's licensed to operate as a broker with all of the responsibilities to the general public associated with the requirements that the law places on the broker's shoulders. That person may never have handled a real estate transaction in his life, and still he is licensed to go out here and conduct business with the general public, for which he is very, very ill prepared to do so.
Okay, again, I wasn't going to bring up licensing, but you just made my point very, very well, that the current licensing procedure is absolutely worthless.
Well, I couldn't agree, Mr. Randolph, that it's worthless at all. I favor the system that we have now of licensing salesmen. I think the 2 years probationary period before you can become a broker, the training period is appropriate. I wouldn't recommend any change there at all. But I would recommend that we seriously consider some minimal mandatory requirements, educational requirements, to sit for the exam initially and to renew the license, but to be careful that we don't go overboard, because this thing could get completely out of hand in the name of consumerism and politics, if you will.
Yes, just one follow-up. I would, when I said totally worthless, not true, but I think with the scenario that you just laid out, it's certainly possible for a person to get a salesman's license, broker's license, without knowing very much about the real estate business. And I would, I'd recommend to you that your continuing education can be handled much the same way. In fields where they do have continuing education, mandatory continuing education, the professional organization, the companies in some cases, in my field, the insurance, comes up with, you know, 3-day crash programs that will get you through your minimum required education. It's usually tied into some sort of a nice little resort situation someplace. You play more golf, you do anything else, and it...
where you get all that government support from the Internal Revenue Code that you people disagree with. Go ahead, Mr. Rado.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At any rate, I just thought it was interesting, your comments. Thank you.
May I, Mr. Randolph, respond briefly to that? You brought up a very interesting question here about the training that's required to pass that exam. And our view is that the minimum amount of training to pass the examination, which is offered by various courses here in town, and some of them are a very crash course, that sort of training would in no way meet the requirements for mandatory education to sit for a salesman's license. We would not consider that adequate in any way. We would feel that there must be some additional requirements above and beyond the mere training to pass that examination.
Other questions, Mr. Randolph?
I've got it.
Mr. Halford?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response
to... Can you point the mic at him a little better?
In response to Dick's question, it seemed that the examples you were giving were not really continuing education examples, but they were examples that might better be met by an activity requirement to say that the individual who has the real estate salesperson's license actually does utilize that license before he can take his broker's exam. And it seemed like what you were really saying is that we need a standard of activity, maybe more than a standard of continuing education.
Or both?
Mr. Albert, I think you're right. And I think a reasonable approach to this may very well have some alternative requirements that could be met, one by formal education and one by experience, if that could be written into the law. An active broker, if he's been in business actively supervising an operation for 2 years, it would seem to me that certainly then, if he has performed well, then he's probably eligible to have his license renewed. I think our concern is with license renewal, where maybe the experience is not all that worthwhile in the intervening period since he renewed, say, 2 years ago. And I would point out also that the business of real estate is getting more and more complex all the time. It's getting to be very, very complex business with all kinds of new rules and regulations with respect to taxation and individual income taxes for real estate people who operate as independent contractors versus salesmen. The sales of limited partnerships is becoming very complicated, and it requires additional licensing to handle securities, because the FTC now has ruled that real estates owned in partnership for investment purposes are really securities and requires regulation by the Federal Trade Commission and that type of the Securities Exchange Commission. So real estate is getting more and more complex all the time, and I think we have to recognize that here in this little state of Alaska where we're so isolated from the rest of the country.
Thank you. That's what I thought you were saying.
Any other questions by the other members of the committee? I have several questions. Mr. Oliver, you said you work for Bowden Company. Is your employer behind you, or a relative of his, or is it a coincidence of names? Is the Mr. Dwight Bowden who just came in, are you in the realty business?
Wrong ones.
Why are you so convinced that the Real Estate Commission cannot carry on a due process hearing?
My concern, Mr. Chairman, is not that they haven't the ability to carry on a due process hearing. I believe they can. We have our real estate brokers primarily. We try to get experienced brokers on the on our professional standards committee, and we do that all the time without going to the courts. And we encourage our members to utilize the services of our professional
system. But you don't administer a client or a security or surety fund either, do you?
We do not. No, we do not. And our punitive measures are rather limited to expulsion from membership in case we find someone, an agent or a broker who is not measuring up to our standards. On the other hand, we provide, I think, a very professional service. It can be done, and there's no reason the Real Estate Commission members can't operate in the same fashion. They're all good people, too. My concern is that they don't have time to do it. You're asking the Real Estate Commission people to perform
I'm not.
A...
This is a recommendation.
Well, the state is asking the commission to perform a vital service here for the state on their own time with very little compensation for it. They are business people, too. They have to work. And the amount of time required to conduct fair due process hearings in complaints brought by the general public, gentlemen, is not going to be there. They will not have the time to devote to it, because those things will snowball, and even the amount of complaints we're handling in our own realtors organization would indicate to me that the workload would be tremendous if you opened the door to that kind of a system.
Well, what kind of other solution do you have? Because this solution was proposed by the legislative auditor, because the present requirement requires people to go to court. Mm-hmm. Now, if Mrs. Munson has a complaint against a realtor such that the amount that she has been harmed or arguably harmed as a result of the various wrong actions that would result in a proper claim against the surety fund is $2,001 or $2,500 or $3,000, she cannot go in under small claims court procedure as pointed out in the audit report, and she must instead hire an attorney. Now, as an attorney, I can tell you that the economics of taking a claim for $2,500, or even a pretty good plaintiff's claim, for $2,500 or $3,000 or $3,500 are pretty marginal. Attorneys whose office overheads are roughly the same as real estate brokerages in urban areas and worse, and who charge between $75 to $110 an hour for their usual hourly clients, are in a rather difficult position to even accept such cases. So unless somebody has a really bad case, if they're in that terrible middle ground where there's a lot of injustice in other civil matters, when people do not qualify for small claims jurisdiction, and yet it's not $10,000 or $20,000 or $300,000, they may be able to have no way of getting any due process other than trying to represent themselves per se in a clumsy way, for the district court rules of procedure now require that formal rules have to be used for claims above $2,000. If you think that it would, that the solution is not to have the real estate commission do it because of the time constraints you've mentioned, what is your alternative solution?
Well, my alternative solution goes back to one basis, one of the points made by the legislative audit in favor of their recommendations, that it takes too long for a court hearing to wend its way through and reach a decision. In a couple of years, I think the figure was mentioned. If the investigative capability is increased, like it is being doing now, it is increasing 100% in support of real estate claims, or even more so maybe, if there's one individual whose attention is going to be solely devoted to real estate matters, then that should shorten the time required to bring a case to a hearing in the courts. I don't think that we're here to solve the problems of the backlogs in the courts today. That's a problem that's facing us all in every walk of life. And I think we have to live with that to a certain extent.
Well, I don't think I wasn't addressing questions of the backlog of the courts. I'm saying that the auditors have pointed out, and I agree with them, and I think it's a pretty hard argument to attack, that for someone who has this middle-range dollar value complaint, it's not the problem I'm addressing now of delays or improper investigative tools to either the commission, its executive secretary, or to occupational licensing, or court delays. It's the fact that unless there is something other than this, if the courts doesn't work in the court system, I don't think it does. And if the real estate commission doesn't do it because you think they shouldn't, who should do it? How should these middle level complaints that might be claims against the surety fund be solved?
Well, I think I go back to my due process, Mr. Chairman. I think that everybody is entitled to due process, and
I think assuming that whatever system we would establish would have due process, what should it be? That's what I'm asking.
I don't think I have a specific recommendation that is going to address that problem. I think my feeling is that we have to rely on the court system on these things rather than to place that authority and responsibility on the shoulders of the Real Estate Commission.
I don't know the answer to this question. It may be more appropriate to ask the Real Estate Commission members, but if you know, or if you happen to know, about how much money is in that fund right now?
Well, I think you'll find that there's $250,000 in that fund now that some of it has been committed, because I believe the law reads if when it reaches $250,000 that the excess has to be spent to further education in the real estate industry.
And you're pretty sure it's beyond the maximum?
Oh, it has gone beyond the maximum. I'm positive of that. Yes. I would point, I believe there, if I'm not mistaken, there's a limit of $10,000 that can be dispersed to that, satisfy claims.
I did not know that, and that means that all the claims are hurting in the way that we just were talking about.
I think the limit is $10,000, if I'm not mistaken. And I might point out that a great number of claims would fall under that $10,000. On the other hand, there are some claims that would be greatly in excess of the $10,000 figure.
If the law allowed it.
If the law allowed it. And those, of course, are going to go to court because the injured parties are... Either party, of course, considers themselves injured, and it's going to be probably wind up in court to be settled.
I have a couple of other questions here. Mr. Halford got into an area that I think maybe I'm repeating. I made some notes here on it. You seemed to be in favor of
a mix of new requirements that are not now in the law or regulations with regard to requirements of work experience and some minimum educational requirements, rather than just cramming for an exam and having a certificate on the wall and not working. Let me just describe one that I'm familiar with that is no longer the law. I don't know whether that's good or bad, but when I was first licensed by the Federal Communications Commission, I hate to admit 18 years ago, as a commercial radio telephone operator, which translates broadcast engineer, the then requirements under the FCC regulations were that my license could be maintained, renewed every 5 years just upon application, but also the license had to have written on the back of it the service provided by my employer and also a comment about the quality of the service. It went back to a rather more ancient requirement that masters of vessels would do this sort of thing for the earlier radio licenses in the 19-teens. Would a requirement something like that be appropriate? Because I attended a luncheon with the Fairbanks Board of Realtors, and there was just a throwaway comment about realtors in this room, they said, who just hang other people's licenses on the wall and don't even come in the door. And many people were viewing that as an abuse, which is apparently legal, and it seems like you're saying the same thing. Would some requirement in that direction seem appropriate to you?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that would have to fall into the category of acceptable solutions to this problem could be considered viable. Our main concern is that if we go to mandatory education, it's going to be exaggerated. It's going to be a requirement that is entirely inappropriate to the real needs of the situation. While we see the wisdom in establishing some requirements, we certainly also see the dangers of excessive requirements on our people.
By the way, I don't know an awful lot about the politics of the state in the Midwest, but I was interested that although Mr. Randolph apparently misread you and thought that you were talking about requirements now on the books in other states, your quote exactly was legislation currently under consideration in, and you couldn't remember the state. You thought it was either Illinois or Iowa.
Ohio. It was, I believe, either Illinois or Ohio.
Well, the phrase legislation currently under consideration is a great one for scaring people half to death. If you look at all the bills that have been introduced in the 52 American jurisdictions in the United States Congress, you can find some of the most frightening, awful things in the world. Thank God about 90% of them never pass. So I don't know whether your view that other states are currently considering legislation means that it's being seriously considered, stands a tinker's chance to pass at all, or whether just one flaky introduced a bill that he knew would never go anywhere in order to please an interest group. Do you know whether it's really seriously being considered in this state?
I believe I can respond to that, Mr. Chairman. It is being seriously considered to the point that that is an example that has been publicized within the National Association of Realtors nationwide as a dangerous precedent. And that's the way it came to my attention.
So your national organization believes it is being seriously considered rather than just a bill thrown in by a member?
Yes, and also believes that that type of legislation is the kind of excessive legislation that we need to guard against.
I have a couple of other notes, but I can't quite read what I thought I wanted to ask you.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, Mr. Halford, while I'm gathering myself, why don't you ask your question or make your comment?
Yeah, just a comment. I'm glad to hear you're saying that because I'm glad to see that the industry is worried about excessive requirements. Too often, I think the industry, especially those established in the industry, are not so worried about others being able to come into the industry. And that is an indication to me, both in terms of your personal perspective and the industry itself, that at least we're not facing a board that's being used as a tool to keep competition out of the industry.
I'd like to. I appreciate your comments, Mr.
Halford.
I'd
like to cut a little shorter because it is. Are there other... I can't translate my notes. I can't read my own writing, so I can't remember what my other question was. Other questions by the members of the committee? Any other final comments, sir?
No, only to say thank you very much for this opportunity to appear.
Okay, very good, and please keep in touch. If you wish, and it's entirely up to you, if you'd like to either leave your notes or send us a letter summarizing and adding and expanding on what you said, we'd appreciate it. And also, we will be having one more meeting, at least one more meeting, with regard to this board after the session convenes in Juneau, in January.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
We have Before I take Mr. Bowden, who apparently wishes to, thank you very much, he did give me a statement here, and I'll ask this, that this be copied and handed out to the members a little bit later on. We do have Mr. Bowden here who wishes to testify. Meantime, let me check the other stations. Fairbanks, do you have anyone new there who, and anyone who wishes to testify? Maxine, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. No, we have no further people here other than the first two that I mentioned earlier this morning.
And they are still there, is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you very much. Juno, Deborah, who do you have there now?
Okay, we have the same people here right now.
Okay, that's Ms. Garrett, Mr. Youngquist, Mr. Long, and you were expecting Ms. Griggs?
Ms. Angles has joined us now.
Okay, thank you. Noam, your witness testified. Bob, do you have anybody else?
No, Mr. Chairman, no one else.
Soldatna, do you have Representative Malone or anyone?
No, we don't have Mr. Malone, but we do have Helen Burt with Beluga Realty. She's observing.
She doesn't wish to testify at this time?
No, sir.
And would you spell her last name, please?
C-U-R-T.
She, G is in golf.
C-U-R-T.
Very fine. Any other stations online with any observers or people who wish to testify with regard to the House Commerce meeting on Sunset Review of the Real Estate Commission? Okay, very fine. Mr. Bowden, here in Anchorage, if you would take that seat, and as I had to indicate earlier, you'll have to have a heavy hand because this is push to talk, which probably isn't the best design in the world, but it ain't my fault. So just you know, put a lead weight on that switch as you testify.
Okay. My name is Dwight Bowden. I'm a real estate broker, Bowden Company Realtors. I've been in the business for 11 years now, and in the past I have been president of the Anchorage Board of Realtors and of the State Board, and as well as the National Director for the National Association of Realtors. I've never been on the Real Estate Commission for some strange reason, but I don't think that I really missed that. I'm not currently active in board activities, and I'm sure that some of my remarks, even though Mr. Oliver is in my office, has been for a couple of years now, we don't necessarily agree on everything.
He did point out that he was not representing his employer. He felt he was representing some kind of a consensus of the group, and he said there were many differences.
Yes, I think there are. I want to emphasize, though, that I am in favor of continuing education requirements for real estate salesmen and brokers. I think particularly brokers. I've talked to real estate people in a lot of other states regarding their requirements, and plus the fact that I've been a broker now for, I think 9 years, eight maybe, I don't know. It's hard to remember. And the problem of hiring salespeople, of course, is a continued one if you're going to run a successful real estate operation. I'm certainly in favor of the more frequent exams given salesmen these past few years. I think it was very bad a number of years ago when we only gave exams three or four times a year. The examinations, I think, are very minimal for getting into real estate. They certainly don't cover what you have to do. I consider that a real estate salesman's license is a license to learn. And unless a salesman is active and does continue his education, he's not going to be successful in the business. Unfortunately, one of the things that Mr. Oliver outlined is quite true. There are people who will pass the take the real estate exam, pass, find a broker who will hang his license for 2 years, and then he could take the broker's exam. During this entire time, he's probably got a full-time job in some other occupation, and after he passes the broker's exam, he may very well continue in that full-time job. But as far as the law is concerned, he is able to do anything that that I may do, who has been very active in the real estate field for a number of years. You may not really know how to handle a transaction, and I think the public is not served very well by that, by having that person have the ability to become a broker and really not know anything about real estate. Real estate is a very complex field. I certainly don't think that I know, even despite my education in the field, know everything there is to know about real estate. I have some very limited fields that I work in. It's very difficult to stay proficient in those fields even. But I think that a salesman should be required to have some education. I think that not prior to getting his license, but after he gets his license. In other words, in order to retain his license as a salesman, or when he becomes a broker, he should be required to continue his education. The other question, I think where my views diverge from Mr. Oliver's, is that having to do with the surety fund and due process. As I mentioned, I've never been a member of the Real Estate Commission, but I certainly do feel that they're doing a good job and have been doing a good job for a number of years. I've had very few complaints with them. I certainly sympathize with the amount of time that they spend in being a member of the Real Estate Commission. But the surety fund, I was very active in lobbying for its adoption at the time that that it was passed a number of years ago. And I think that the Real Estate Commission could very well act as a board of arbitration in order to handle claims against that fund. Going to court, particularly in any claim less than $10,000, is really not a very profitable enterprise. It's very time-consuming and also very expensive for all the parties involved. I think the Real Estate Commission, I don't know whether they, I think they work without pay now, I'm not sure. They probably get paid for meetings. I think they possibly should be compensated for some of the time that they spend. I think that would work to clear up that problem.
Is that your testimony?
Yes.
Questions for the members of the committee? Mrs. Munson?
Yes. You, back to the continuing education. One of the things that you said was if a real estate person doesn't continue his education, he's just not going to make it in the field. Yet, I hear you saying that we maybe should have mandatory continuing education of some sort. And
it sounds like you're asking Mr. Randolph's question. Go ahead.
Well,
appreciate the help.
The two statements are kind of in a conflict. It would appear to me that the type of continuing education that you're talking about, that we might mandate, might not be the answer to the problem. The growth of an individual often doesn't take place in a course. And I'm sure that a lot of your information didn't come that way. The problem with the hanging of a license seems to me to be something that could be solved quite readily with the just the fact that when the person goes to renew their license, that the broker that they had supposedly been working for would have to sign an affidavit that this person has been gainfully employed by the broker so that the license could be renewed. Otherwise, I think that they would have to go back and start from ground zero as far as working for a broker's license. It seems to me that's more of a problem than a continuing education.
There is a statement that the broker has to sign for the salesman before he can take the broker's license, but the statement is very—it's a very mild statement. I don't recall it directly, but so that I can quote it. But it has to do with the person being active in the real estate field. Well, I think that an awful lot of brokers will. Who may not really be active in the real estate field. Usually the brokers who do hang licenses are not themselves active in the real estate field. And the fact that a person cannot make it in real estate if he doesn't work at it and continue his education by his own volition just doesn't cover it in the situation, because the people we're talking about, both real estate salesmen and brokers, are occupied full-time in some other occupation other than real estate. And they may, because of the fact that they have a license, then may very well decide that they're going to enter the real estate field as a broker, or may decide to handle only one transaction. And put himself out to the public as being a qualified real estate practitioner or broker, when in fact he is not. And by doing so, the public is certainly not served. I don't know, other than continuing education requirements, and I agree with you in the statement that you made, that taking a course is not necessarily... doesn't necessarily help the growth of the individual, because there are a lot of educated fools around. But I think it would be a step in the right direction. There possibly should be something else that could be done. It just doesn't occur to me what the solution might be.
Thank you. It does seem to be a problem that is very real, and I don't think that it's going to be solved through continuing education, but very definitely there should be some way to control this type of licensing procedure for brokers.
There's, of course, the sort of thing I'm drifting in the direction of thinking about is having an experience requirement for all of them, which might be more important than the continuing education, but maybe stating that some continuing education could be substituted for a portion of the experience requirement, or some combination like that. Mr. Randall?
Two or three questions. I think you indicated that the test now taken is a relatively minimal situation, and
that is correct.
Indicated that, okay, so I assume that you'd be in favor of a substantially tougher test.
For brokers, yes. For salesmen, no. I think the present test, I think a portion of my remarks that I was planning to make, I skipped over. As a real estate broker trying to hire salespeople who want to become active in the field, there are qualified individuals in other occupations as salesmen who you try to hire. Well, one of the requirements that before you can hire them is that they take and pass a real estate exam. A number of years ago, that was a very difficult thing because there were very few exams given. I think that the real estate salesman's exam shouldn't necessarily be any more difficult than it is. And the frequency with which they're given now, I think, is a good idea. In some other states, there are such things as a real estate broker can hire a person who is not licensed, take responsibility for him, basically as an apprentice, and then recommend him have him take the license after he's already active in the field. That is the fact in some states. And I would even go along with that as a possibility. But what I want to avoid is a person particularly becoming a real estate broker without necessary education or experience in the field. The salesman, in their current laws, the broker for whom the salesman works is responsible for that salesman's actions, whether or not he knows about them. That's a requirement that weighs very heavily on a responsible broker's shoulders. But then in real estate, as in a lot of other fields, there are some people in the field that are not responsible. And that's just a fact of life.
How often does this responsibility come to bear? Broker's responsibility.
Mr. Chairman, could we interrupt a minute?
Yes, go ahead.
This is Fairbanks. Would you please ask Representative Randolph to speak a little closer to the mic? My observers cannot hear.
Yeah, bell her out there, Richard.
So be it. How often does this responsibility come to bear, that the broker is really brought to task over something that the salesman has done?
In my case, fairly frequently. Of course, my main responsibility is to avoid the problem in the first place. But I'd say in an office as active as mine, there are probably anywhere from 4 to 6 cases a year in which there is, the public either was damaged by something one of my salesmen did or did not do, or imagined that they were, you know.
Could I ask you to expand on your answer there before Mr. Randolph continues? You say an office as active as yours. Could you quantify that? How many employees do you have? Volume business? What some kind of index that we could know what you mean by that?
Okay. For instance, in 1978, my office sold a little over $20 million worth of real estate. I have currently either 14 or 15 licensed salespeople.
Licensed salespeople and how many associate brokers?
Well, I think of those licensed salespeople, I think there are 7 or 8 who are associate brokers.
Oh, you were counting the associate brokers?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
go ahead. Really, go ahead, Mr. Randolph.
Okay, back to the exam. You feel it should be tougher for brokers, about the same for real estate agents.
That's correct.
Feel that in both categories that the exam does a good job of testing the competence of either the salesman or the broker?
I think it does, yeah. At least their ability to think.
Okay, then as a part of this continuing education, what would be wrong with having every broker and salesman take the test every 2 or 3 years?
I think I used to hear some people choking out there. Go ahead.
I don't know that would answer the problem. If the tests were changed, in which I think it is being changed, to keep up with the times, that might. I don't know. I wouldn't throw that either as a complete solution or throw it out as completely unworkable. I haven't thought about it.
It just seems to me that if the whole point of all of this is to be sure we have competent people out in the field, and we want to go continuing education can be done in such a way that it doesn't really prove anything. And if the test is in fact effective in measuring the competency and adequacy of the people and the expertise that they have to have, it seems to me the appropriate thing to do is let them take a test every 2 or 3 years and substantiate without beyond the question of a doubt that they are still competent to be functioning. This competency thing seems to me to be a very nebulous situation to get a handle on. You indicated you're very active and obviously are very active in the real estate business. You also indicated that there are some areas of expertise that you're not very sharp in.
That's correct.
There are some that you're much more professional and much more competent in. Maybe what the state ought to do is somehow in the public interest communicate with the consumer exactly who is the most competent real estate agent or insurance agent or whatever in a particular field, so the public gets the very best salesman possible in a particular situation that they have. In the public interest, we ought to probably do something like that. What would happen in your office if a person comes to you with a deal that you're not particularly competent in? Would you send him to somebody who is more competent?
Generally so, yes. And there, that is true. I mean, there's a lot of types of transactions that I will not handle, and I do refer people. I'd make a comparison, really, with...
try insurance. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to use attorneys.
Mr. Randolph's asking the question, so try insurance.
I don't know. I'm not as familiar with insurance people as I am attorneys.
Go ahead with attorneys, that's all right.
But basically, I think that in the business world, you have to be very careful when you hire an attorney, because it's impossible for an attorney to be proficient in all areas of his field.
Amen.
Yet, if a client comes to him and he chooses to do so, he can take on any case that he wants to. So, I don't know that. That's an entirely different question, but it does relate to real estate.
Could you insure my bassoon, Mr. Randolph?
Yes.
Oh, I just thought I'll see you later.
I can give you the rate.
Okay.
I think you made my point very well, though. Is that all this licensing and trying to keep people competent, I think it still boils down to the fact the consumer can walk into anybody's office they want to, and the professional they're dealing with in that particular area can make the choice of whether he ought to or ought not to handle it. In 99% of the cases, you get a chance, a hunk of business coming your way, you're going to take it, and you're going to you're going to go ahead and do the deal. And the public may or may not, in the public choosing an attorney, a real estate agent, an insurance agent, may or may not be choosing the best, most competent person for his particular situation in the area. But he's stuck with what he gets. No matter how hard we try, there's going to be all sorts of degrees of competency on everybody. And the consumer, in many cases, doesn't come up with the best possible deal.
Would you be in favor of insurance being not being licensed then?
Absolutely.
I don't comment.
Would
on
you
that
be thing. In favor of repealing all the laws requiring insurance? That's a.
Yeah.
We'll get into that another subject. I'm sure we'll see some bills about that. Go ahead.
I think this does bring another area to mind, and it's this that. We talk about the surety fund and the fact that the whole idea of arbitrating these potential claims, and you indicate you thought possibly the board ought to handle it and that they ought to be paid for handling it. Who ought to pay them? The state or the profession?
Well, the surety fund is furnished by the profession, therefore I think they should be paid from the surety fund.
Okay, good. One last question. Couldn't the association do a great deal of the quality control by taking the responsibility to monitor the expertise of people and reject membership in the association and based on whether they're the kind of person you want in your association or not? And wouldn't that give the public a pretty good indication of who is competent and who isn't competent?
Well, yes. That might work. I think, though, it's a natural tendency for us to want to give that responsibility to somebody else.
Thank you, sir. I'm glad you said that.
I can just see we have this nice little private association. No Irish need apply, no short people, no fat people, only those that are infinitely wise, like whoever we have identified ourselves to be. Maybe that's what Mr. Randolph has in mind. I'm baiting you, Vic. We can do this at a later time.
Well, then don't bait me.
Okay. The comment well taken. Other questions for Mr. Bowden and members of the committee? Mr. Bowden, some of that gave rise to an interesting line of questioning I've got.
I just found out earlier, and I'm supposed to know all this stuff like we're all supposed to be experts in every area of state government. We really aren't. I read the audit report this morning. Apparently, the real estate profession, like mine, pays a rather higher license fee per year, every other year, compared to many of the other professions. Is this somewhat taken into account in budget preparation by the commission, or is it a consideration, if you know?
I don't think I'm qualified to answer that. I might give you a little bit of the history that I'm aware of, though, in that, as I mentioned earlier, I was one of the members of the State Legislative Committee and did quite a bit of lobbying to get the present surety law in. Prior to that, we had a bonding requirement, which we didn't feel really handled the situation. And the purpose, we felt that by the profession, we proposed the present surety fund law, which actually did increase our license fees for the purpose of building up the surety fund. And for the purpose of, after the surety fund was built up sufficiently to protect the public, that excess money be used for education in the field of real estate.
So in a way, you're doing something close to what the Bar Association does.
I'm not familiar with what the Bar Association
does. I think I pay either $180 or $200 a year, and about $20 of that goes in the client security fund, and which is administered by the bar under the court supervision of the Alaska Bar Rules. And the rest of the funds go into the working budget of the Board of Governors, partly because that can be a dedicated fund because it predates the state constitution, and maybe it would be unconstitutional to do that directly for the other professions, but it might be that the same theory could be applied. I was very shocked at the first Sunset Review this last year when I found out people in other professions are paying maybe $10 a year for their license fee, and I've been looking at what I've been paying. Now I find out the real estate people are in about the same boat.
Yeah, we're paying for that, the licensing fee, and then we also pay to be a member of the Board of Realtors.
That's technically a private organization, although you treat it as a public interest organization.
That is technically a private organization, and there's no requirement that that a real estate licensee be a member of that organization in the state of Alaska or any other state, primarily due to the Justice Department.
Do you find any confusion rendered by the difference in names? That is, a member of the public hears about the board of examiners of this, the board of that, and all of those other boards are state governmental entities. In your profession, I don't think we've found any others, apparently the usage of the trade, or what's traditional, is to refer to the professional association, which is a private group, as a board, and the state regulatory group is a commission. Do you find people confusing these roles in the general public?
Yes, they very definitely do confuse them.
I hope this is explained to them immediately.
Yes, you know, when I was a member of the Professional Standards Committee of the Board of Realtors for quite a number of years, and in that capacity, I was very frequently called by members of the public or consumers, as would be, I have to explain the difference to them, basically. When they wanted to make a complaint, I'd tell them how to make it and who they probably should make it to.
Questions by the other members of the committee? Thank you very much. Mr. Ramsey had come here as an observer. I think he now wanted to make a comment or two. Do you still wish to testify?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Bowden.
Thank you.
Oh, I just got a note from an air taxi operator, since we're all venting our private interests in disclosing our apparent conflicts, from Mr. Halford. Some air taxi operators pay over $1,000 a year for state aircraft registrations on top of federal registrations. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't know that. The real estate people and lawyers feel much better now, Mr. Halford. Go ahead, Mr. Ramsey.
Do I need to push this down?
Yeah, you're going to have to. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm John Ramsey, and I'm here represent primarily the University of Alaska. I'm also employed by Professional Realty. 1976, I was the first graduate from the University of Alaska with a real estate degree.
What is your employer again?
Professional Realty and the University of Alaska. I'm a real estate instructor for the University of Alaska. It's 1976, I graduated being the first graduate of the real estate program there in the business school. And immediately following, went to the University of Wisconsin for a master's degree in real estate. So the continuing education is very dear to my heart. And I would like to support the 30-hour rule that the president of the local board of realtors, George Oliver, has come out in favor of. I do feel it's a little bit loosely defined on who is going to educate the licensees, what type of organizations and what type of hours will be credited toward continuing education. But I do believe that the continuing education rule is a step in the right direction, and that that's our answer, and not to take the same license exam each year or an upgrade of the license. I think that to pass the exam doesn't necessarily mean that you are qualified to deal with people's affairs. So we at the university very definitely want to play that role of the continuing education. We, in 1974, offered no real estate classes, and today we offer 15, including a bachelor's degree in real estate, a master's degree in real estate, a certificate, a professional certificate in real estate, which is the core real estate classes for those persons who may not want to obtain a four-year degree or have a degree in other fields. We also offer a master's degree and an advanced professional certificate. The advanced professional certificate would be the core courses for those students wishing to take the graduate courses, obtain a certificate, and not have to take the other courses.
Is it called a Bachelor of Science or a Bachelor of Arts or a Bachelor of what?
Bachelor
Business
of
Administration
Arts.
Or what?
Bachelor of Arts.
Bachelor of Arts.
Emphasis in real estate as emphasis in accounting or emphasis in insurance or any of the other courses. Our courses, for example, currently are real estate law, property management, two appraisal courses which have been approved and accepted by the Society of Real Estate Appraisers. So we have a blend of industry with university approved courses.
Who teaches those appraising courses?
Sometimes we have adjunct faculty members who are industry personnel. Sometimes either Dr. Green will teach those, one of the two, or some of the industry people who are qualified and approved by their society.
I hope you don't mind. I really shouldn't interrupt testimony with questions, but I wanted to ask things as you went. If you can throw rocks at me, I'll do it the other way.